Correct on Canuck Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, here in the Mobile Kintech studio, live at Rogers Arena. Canucks and Columbus Blue Jackets are coming tonight, and that's why this hour of Canuck Central brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light, plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. You can hear Back in Black in the background because the Canucks will be wearing their black skate jerseys. I've had a few people, the holiday season, of course, being like, hey, do you know where I can get a Quinn Hughes black skate jersey? And after doing a little bit of research, it seems like they're like, out
really?
Everywhere around wow. the city, like impossible to find almost.
I guess Quinn Hughes is pretty popular.
I would say the captain is pretty good.
Yes, he's not bad.
And the black skate jersey is quite popular as well. Let's get into it. It's the mailbag here on Canuck Central. Yes, the mailbag. Your questions here for us on Canuck Central. We have producer Eddie Gregory back at Mission Control handling this week's questions. Eddie, how you doing?
Do we have Eddie?
I hear myself.
There we go.
I am good. Thank you very much, guys.
All right, what do we got this week, Eddie?
Starting off with Lotto Line 2024. So now that Igor Shesterkin has got his contract, will Kevin Lankinen be too expensive because Igor is making Pedersen money? So one would assume he would get more than $5 million.
I mean, it really depends on how Lankinen finishes the season. Like ultimately, like we don't yet have enough data to say that Lankinen is for sure going to get the money
we don't have all the information.
We do not. Yeah. Like if he finishes the season as strong as he's been playing so far, then yeah, maybe somebody does offer him more. You know, the cap is going up. Does it get into a bidding war for somebody that needs a goaltender and he gets say north of $5 million? I mean, I guess that possibility exists.
If Kevin Lankinen can get more than $5 million, sure, the possibility exists. It only takes one team. He's played really well for the Canucks right now. But, like, happy trails, Kevin. I'm happy you got the bag. Go and enjoy it. We can't do that here in Vancouver.
No,
like, that would be my approach to it.
Yeah, and if you look at even guys like, say, Joey Decord, he got five, but he had a pretty, you know, the sample size
small.
What was pretty small, but he got five. Like Ville Husso got that deal from the Red Wings, you know, just over $4 million per year over 3 years, and that was after 1 year of having 40 starts and a .919 save percentage.
Yeah.
Right? So that's kind of the range. I think it is somewhere between $4 to $5 million, maybe a hair above five, but that would have to mean he's played well all year to the end, and you know, some team is really willing to pay it that much for him.
It's going to be interesting to see how the tandem works with Demko backing up tonight. We'll see how it plays out. I mean, if Demko backs up again on Sunday, then you're going to have the classic Vancouver goalie controversy conversations popping up. But, you know, we'll see just how much and how frequently Kevin Lankinen continues to play now that Demko is back and on the roster. Next question.
JB Canucks, in response to the Trouba deal, if you could pick one active Canuck contract to fully move off the books with no retention, who would it be?
With no retention?
I mean, it's pretty obvious. It's Desharnais?
Yeah.
Like who else are you looking at in this team? You're like, oh, you have to get this money off the books.
There's no there's no Louis Erickson on the roster anymore. You know, they don't have any significantly onerous contract that you would say, hey, we need to get this off the books. You know, they just signed Myers to this contract, and for as much as people don't like Myers, I think, again, for $3 million, it's hard to find somebody that's going to give you 18 to 20 minutes a night in the role that Myers plays at that price.
Yeah, Myers' salary is not the issue. It's what you're asking of him at times.
Yeah.
And that's kind of been the bigger
issue.
When
he was making $6 million, okay, different story. But now this new contract, not as bad.
And you know what it is when it comes to right-hand defensemen. You look at, for instance, Desharnais and Myers. And Myers obviously isn't perfect, but I think we all agree he is a better and more effective player than Desharnais. He's making two.
Yeah.
You know, like I'd rather pay a million more to have Myers, for instance, right? And you know, the question is somewhat unfair to these guys because no player on his team has really underachieved massively. I know Pettersson people were really big on earlier this year, not playing well enough, but I have no issues with that contract. So yeah. I just don't think they have a albatross, so to speak. And if you're trying to choose one, it's between Desharnais and perhaps even Heinen.
Yeah.
In 2.25 this year and next, and considering the forwards the Canucks have, like, could you do better with that, for instance? And that's having to answer the question. You can look at it and say that you don't really feel bad about any of those guys on the books.
The thing that would give the Canucks the most benefit is not having Oliver Ekman-Larsson's cap penalty on the books anymore. That's probably what would it be, but that's not exactly what the question was asking.
Yeah, I mean, it's the OEL buyout, people text it, obviously, but that's not... You can't trade that. You can't do anything. But that's there. That's dead money. It's dead money.
You're stuck with it. You can't do anything about it.
No.
You can't trade that, unfortunately.
No.
Can't just make it disappear.
It's there. It just is.
Like the way that Chris Drury just made over $11 million disappear from his cap commitments for the New York Rangers. All right, next question.
Oscar's going to double dip. Two questions. Is Shesterkin at 11.5 an overpay? And two, what do you think that means for Demko?
So Shesterkin is and has got the biggest goalie contract in history at 11.5 over the next 8 years. Is it an overpay? Who's the highest paid goalie in the league right now? Is it, before today, it was Sergei Bobrovsky, $10 million. Carey Price was the other that eclipsed the $10 million charge. He was like 10.5, 10.6,
yeah,
or something like that.
Yeah, it's, I don't see, I don't like it.
So I do think, like, Shesterkin, yeah, it's a high number, but he is, without a shadow of a doubt, the best goalie in the league. So he deserves the best contract of any goalie in the league, and he's now got it. Is it an overpay? Personally, I wouldn't be in love with committing that much to a netminder, but personal preference. Shesterkin is that good. He is worth the money.
I don't know. To me, Shesterkin is one of those guys you just pay him. It's like when the Canucks, I know people then love the Luongo deal, for instance, and towards the end with how Schneider played or whatever, but he's the type of player that makes your team so much better that you just pay him.
What's it going to look like in 5 years? I don't know. Figure it out in 5 years.
Yeah, I'm not even sure it's going to be bad. It all comes down to health, I suppose, but he's really good, man. Like, he's incredible.
He's incredible. Like, he is so good.
He's one of the best players in the league, and if you have a chance to lock up one of the best players in the league, I don't know if a price is too big. Like, it's a lot of money, for instance, but I think there's too much sticker shock when it comes to NHL contracts all the time. I think fans, because of the salary cap, I get it, but there's always this thing, oh, you can't pay guys so much money, it's too much money. Guess what? It costs a lot of money to get good players.
Yeah.
You know,
The Rangers don't reach anywhere near the level of excellence they've had the last couple of years without Igor Shesterkin. So, you know, he's as valuable a player as there is in the league. As for Demko, I mean, Demko's going to have to go on one hell of a heater to get himself into, you know, like a double-digit kind of conversation. I know the cap's going up quite a bit. If Demko didn't get hurt last year, we're having a different conversation about it. But he did. There is a bit of an injury track record, whether that's fair or not, for you to decide. It's there. People feel it. People believe it. And that's something Demko is going to have to overcome now over the next 18 months that he has left on his remaining deal. But he's going to have to do a lot to get himself into, like, I can see him get into a $7-8 million kind of contract conversation, but to get into a double digit conversation, he's going to have to go on a hell of a heater.
It's not happening. He's not getting 11.5 million now.
Even 10,
like, hey, famous last words, maybe he does, right? But because of the things you outlined, I think his high watermark would be kind of what Ottinger got, what Swayman got, $8-8.5 million, somewhere along those lines potentially. And the question just comes down to how willing are you to make that type of bet on a goaltender who's had the issues that he's had? And that's going to ultimately be the big question that you have, right?
Yeah.
And I think to answer the question, I think the Ottinger deal is probably, Swayman is probably the most he can do.
If he signs a contract this summer, he'll be eligible as of July 1st. Hard for him to really hit a huge number there. But if he puts, you know, a strong end of season together and then a strong season next year together, cap will be at or around $100 million by the time his contract is up. Now we're having a different conversation, but you know, a lot of things have to line up for Demko to hit that ceiling potential for his next contract. Next.
Justin and East Van, how many starts will Thatcher Demko get on this current homestand?
Okay, so the line is 2.5. Are you taking the over or under? I'm taking the under.
Yeah, I was about to say 2.
Yeah, right? I think 2 is kind of the number.
You know, if he starts Sunday, like I even think it might be a lot to – well, I mean, once he gets into a game, then we're having a different conversation. So playing 3 would be splitting the entire trip with Lankinen.
Yeah, I think 2.
Yeah.
Because if it's 3, that means he's getting 3 of the next 5.
Yeah.
Which I don't think he's going to get.
I mean.
Right?
Yeah. They could just go 1-1-1-1-1, right? Like, and split it up evenly that way, in the way that they intended to at the start of the year with Lankinen and Chilovs. But we'll have to see. I think it's the under is certainly taking the juice here. And
what if his first start is Tuesday? Yeah. I could see it.
If his first start is Tuesday, then I think there's a very slim chance he hits the over on that number. So I'll fade it as well. I'm going to say 2. Next.
From Woodrow, will the Canucks make a trade before the NHL holiday roster freeze?
Ooh. See, I want to say no.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, like, doubt these guys and their ability to make trades at your own peril because of how they pull off trades. But I'll say no.
Yeah.
I'll say no.
I'd love to see it. You know, they obviously made the Zadorov trade last year right on November 30th, or as Bick would say, November 31st. And I think they could use it, add somebody on defense, but It's just that they need to continue to accrue the cap space before getting something significant into this roster. So I find like it's really hard to see where that position is going to open up for the Vancouver Canucks. I say no. We're too much same today. Next question. Next question.
Get in there. Sorry. Andrew Graham. Lots of stuff going on over here today. What kind of AAV and term would Suter be looking at if he keeps up this pace? Any possible way him and Brock and Lank can be kept?
If the cap goes up, you could probably keep all 3, but you can't do anything else.
Yeah.
And it gets really tight, like very tight. And that comes down to that. That's me thinking Lankinen at 4 and Pugh Suter at, let's say, 3, 3.5.
Yeah. You're kind of the ballpark to keep all those guys is about $15 million.
Like, for instance, because of the production from Pugh Suter last year and what you're seeing this year, he's probably looking at similar to what Dakota Joshua got, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not 4 years, 3 years, because he's a little bit older. Like, maybe that's something that you look at. But given the production, the versatility, I think kind of that's in that range. If you can get him signed under 3, like, would you do a Pugh Suter, say, a 5-year deal at 2, 2.5?
No. I'm okay.
Yeah, I think so.
I like him. He's the Swiss Army knife because he's Swiss.
Yes,
but you know.
But yeah, that's the thing. Like, you're probably that's the only way to bring the AAV down under 3. I think.
Yeah.
If you get him, like, let's say, if he actually signs a 3-year deal at 2.5 or something, I mean, that's a bargain. But probably somewhere in the 3 range.
You know, I feel like, and Elliot Friedman had this as part of a note in his 32 Thoughts blog that he really wanted to come to Vancouver. With Rick Tocchet here, he felt like, you know, there's a level of seriousness to the way that the Canucks do things and the way Rick Tocchet does things, and it was of intrigue to him. Now, he may just be looking for the biggest contract out there and available to him at this stage of his career, but, you know, what exactly is he looking for? We did see Teddy Bluger potentially leave money on the table this past offseason to remain in Vancouver, right? So this organization has done a good job of maintaining some players at good prices. And I think that sell job has worked if Suter like scores over 20 goals, like keeps on this heater, then yeah, it's going to be really tough. But, you know, if he kind of levels off a little bit, ends up between 15 and 17, 18 goals, maybe there is a pathway to keeping him here at around $2.5 million. But I don't know if I would overextend to keep Pugh Suter as much as I love the Swiss Army knife, because he is Swiss. Next question.
From another Andrew, what happened between the club and Ian Clark, one of the best goaltending minds on the planet that Demko advocated for while going through contract talks? He was also a big influence on Shelov's. Will this affect Demko's next contract? If you have him in the club, why not use him? Bit wordy, but...
Yeah, I mean, fair question. So what happened with Ian Clark was, he, you know, this has been outlined. He came to the Canucks and said due to some injuries, he can't be the full-time goalie coach, but he was willing to move on and kind of be the director of goaltending. Mm-hmm. And the Canucks essentially said, no, just be a scout if you can't be the everyday goaltender. I don't disagree that if he's part of the organization, why not utilize him more? I don't think we have the answers to those things. You can speculate as to why that wouldn't happen. We've heard different things about... you know, perhaps not being on the same page, and perhaps the Canucks, you heard some reports about whether Demko was overplayed, overpracticed, and overpushed, so to speak, to some degree, and whether those methods make sense or not. Then we've heard pushback from the other side saying that's not necessarily the case or whatever. So, it, you know, right now we don't have the full picture as to why. But, yeah, I mean, I think organizationally it would be better if you could make more use out of a guy if you're on the same page with them. If the situation is such that you can't make that work, I guess it's better not to have him around. But I don't know. I think Ian Clark's been a tremendous goaltending coach, and having him part of the organization on decision-making level I think would be important. And I would value him more than just being a scout for the team, right? But obviously, right now, that's kind of his position, and the team feels pretty good about it. And to be fair, their goaltending has been fine so far this year, right? And even excelled, considering the way Kevin Lankinen has played.
Shelov's hasn't necessarily excelled.
No, but I will say this about Shelov's. I think even how he played was overrated, even going back to last year.
Well,
but
I mean, we talked about it in the playoffs.
Yeah, like he did admirably in the playoffs, but he wasn't this all-star goalie. I mean, Bick and I had numerous debates on the postgame show. Should they go to DeSmith even, and whether we should have Shelov's play in net? And you know, we had some questions about, no matter how Shelov's has played or not, whether he is as good as people think he is. But he did play better in Vancouver than he did in Abbotsford, and that was partly with Ian Clark. So you can see kind of the tie-ins there. Obviously, a guy that worked well with them. As far as Demko staying long-term, to me, it just comes down to one thing. It's going to be money.
Yeah.
You know, and not to say Demko doesn't want to be here. Like, he has one more contract, a big one.
Yeah.
If he can be healthy, it comes down to money. I don't think, you know, who the goalie coach is going to be a big part of that equation. I think it's going to come down to the money.
Well, it also seems like he's kicked off his relationship with Marco Terenius pretty well. On top of all this. So, yeah, Demko and Ian Clark had a special relationship. That doesn't mean Marco Terenius, the new goalie coach, can't start to develop that with Thatcher Demko. It's one of those things, like, it feels like they just stop short of an amicable parting of ways. You know what I mean? And we can all kind of sense it, but that full story isn't out there and available just yet. Nobody is here to dispute Ian Clark's vast amount of goalie knowledge. I mean, the guy is simply one of the best. There is no doubting that. He has the CV that he has because he is one of the very best up there with the Mitch Korns and the Francois Allaires of the world. He is in that class of goalie teacher, and so it is tough that he isn't utilized more than he currently is, but this is the way the Canucks have chosen to do it.
You can call it philosophical differences and kind of leave it at that.
Ultimately where we sit with this situation. Next question.
Super Daffied. When Miller comes back, is he better than ever?
We would hope so.
I don't know what to expect when Miller comes back, but I don't expect him to be a bad player. I expect JT Miller to be JT Miller.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to come back and make the impact that we see he can make. And clearly he was also hindered physically by something. How much has that improved over time? We'll see when he does return. But I'm expecting JT Miller to be JT Miller. I'm not sure we can expect the best version of him right away, but I don't really have any real concerns about his game, to be honest.
Neither do I. And, you know, I think there was concern about the way that he was playing before he stepped out of the lineup. I think when JT is engaged and focused, he is as almost as good a player as there is in the league. He's as good a power forward as there is in the league. So if you get that version of JT Miller back when he does return to the lineup, then, yeah, you're going to get an incredibly good version of JT Miller. Will he be the best version of Miller ever? And it's a pretty high bar. This is a guy that put up over 100 points last year and was an absolute lock for Team USA, which we've described as a team that's just an absolute force. So, you know, it's tough to say if he'd reach that kind of a ceiling, but I'm pretty confident JT will be at a high level. Next question.
This from Striden. Does Miller play PP1 for the U.S.?
That's going to be one hell of a top power play unit for the U.S. But aside from this year, is there, like, how many better players on the power play are there in the entire National Hockey League than JT Miller? I mean, the guy is a power play savant, if you want to put it that way. When he's quarterbacking on that left half wall, there's not many better players on that side of the ice in the entire National Hockey League. So I would say if it were me, I'd definitely consider having JT and Quinn Hughes on power play one for that U.S. power play unit.
Yeah, I mean, so
obviously Matthews is there too.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have to have Matthews. You have to have Jack Hughes.
Yeah.
And you have to have Quinn.
Yeah. So those four left shots already, if you include Miller.
Yeah. So who's going to be the right shot?
Yeah.
You stick Brock Nelson in front of the net?
You have the two Tkachuks as well.
Yeah. I don't know if JT makes the first unit power play, to be honest.
Interesting.
Like, I think he should be on it, but given how they would go about it, like, I could see them prioritizing having Tkachuk on it.
Yeah.
Right? And you have Jack Eichel as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you can leave Jack Eichel off the first unit power play. So you have Jack Eichel. Like, for instance, like, I love JT Miller. He's not Jack Eichel.
Yeah.
Like, I'm as big as, you know, we're some of the biggest JT media stands there are in this market. But, like, Jack Eichel's a different level.
So over the last 3 years, over the last 3 years of American-born players, Quinn Hughes, Matthew Tkachuk, Jack Hughes, JT Miller, and Jason Robertson would be the five best in power play points.
Yeah, points. But, I mean, Eichel's missed some time, too.
Eichel has missed some time. He is nowhere close to the top of the list, though. He would be 19th on the list.
Yeah, I mean, he's played 63 and 67 games the last 2 years. And before that, played 34.
I mean, it's 22 fewer games over the last 3 years than JT Miller.
That's how many points difference?
Nearly 40 points. 30 points.
Yeah.
So,
I don't know. I think Eichel's the better player. and I like JT a lot.
I mean, it's not about being the better player. I mean, it's about the chemistry of the power play at the end of the day. I mean, I know I also agree Jack Eichel is a better player than JT Miller. But, you know, I just think JT's power play level is elite. As all these guys are.
Yeah.
We're picking at straws.
No kidding.
Next
there we
question.
We finally disagreed about something.
There we go. Next question.
B. Miller 3, which left-handed defenseman prospect are you most excited for and why?
I want to say Elias Pettersson. I think there's just a power to his game, or I guess a heaviness to his game that I can appreciate. So I'm excited for Elias Pettersson. All three of them are interesting. Obviously, Kudryavtsev has maybe the most puck skills out of the three that I would consider the three big left shot D prospects that the Canucks currently have in Elias Pettersson, Kudryavtsev, and Sawyer Mignot. But for me, it's Elias Pettersson.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it probably is Elias Pettersson. I am really intrigued by Sawyer Mineau. Mm-hmm. You know, to see kind of what he's going to be. You know, he's going to be playing for Team Canada at the World Champ at the World Juniors. Could he be a guy that has another ceiling? Because, mm-hmm. you know, I like Kudryavtsev a lot. I like Pettersson a lot. We'll see ultimately what the ceiling is for those players. And the one I'm really intrigued by is Mineau.
I'm not to turn this into a trade discussion, but, like, if you think about where the Canucks have a surplus of prospects in their organization right now, it is at this position. And so, you know, I kind of wonder if they dip into that surplus when we get closer to the trade deadline. Like, if Sawyer Mineau has a good tournament here, you know, maybe that's a team that, you know, other guys are or that's a player that other teams are sort of keyed in on if the Canucks come calling for a trade deadline kind of acquisition.
Realistically, they're not all going to pan out. And if they all did, you don't have room for all of them anyways. You still have Quinn Hughes, right? And then you have Kudryavtsev, you have Mineau, and you have DPD. You're not going to be able to play all of them if they're all going to be good players for you, right? And ultimately, maybe one ends up being good. So I'm not against using some of them as capital, but I don't know if any of their values are such right now where it moves the needle. It would have to be something significant, like, you know, does the World Juniors change move the needle? If he, let's say if he's on the all-tournament team or something, does that change things?
Next.
Back to the big story of the day from Carm. Who won the trade between the Rangers and the Ducks today?
I think the Rangers, simply for getting the money off the books and what they could potentially do with that. How do they use it this year to, you know, eventually find a better piece than what Jacob Trouba is a good question. At the same time, I think the situation with Trouba became untenable. And so getting that money off the books ultimately helps the Rangers more than anything else here. And as for Anaheim, I don't know, man. I got questions. Like, I don't know. I'm not sure what Pat Verbeek is assembling over there in Anaheim right now.
Yeah, I'm not really big on what's happening there as far as their overall plan, but I do like a lot of their young guys.
Yeah.
Like, I think Leo Carlson's a real player. I think his tournament, I think he could be really interesting in the Four Nations.
Yeah.
And I think he's one of the most quiet potential stars in the game. I think when people get to watch him, you'll see the level that he can bring. Like, he can be a real special player.
Yeah. Interesting to see what happens with the Ducks. All right. Final question is, we got to hit the break here, from Rick Dollywall. Red or white wine?
All right. So for me, this is always comes down to what you have it with, right? Like, mm-hmm. if I'm having seafood, I don't like red with seafood. Yep. I like white wine with seafood. You know, and, you know, somebody was mentioning it on Twitter. It was like, well, if you're having charcuterie and things like that and cheese, it has to be red, right? And
yes.
Yeah, of course. And there's certain things you have white wine with. But mm-hmm. to me, it comes down to what you're having. If I'm having steak, I'm having red.
Yeah. If I'm having a nice Pinot Noir.
Yeah. If I'm having Italian, mm-hmm. I'm probably having red.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Again, depends on the dish. Like, when I fire up the Feast of the Seven Fishes for Christmas Eve, you know, we're having lots of white wine. We're not having red. Are you kidding me? But generally, if we're just picking between the two, I will more often than not lean towards a red wine than I would a white wine. And we end up buying both because my wife prefers white wine and I prefer red. So,
yeah.
That's how it goes. And can't decide. Let's just get two.
Yeah, and you end up double dipping.
you double dipped. Another situation where double dipping, maybe not that bad.
It is allowed.
Always responsible, of course. All right, we get into the pregame show next. You'll hear from Rick Tocchet and Quinn Hughes. Canucks and Columbus Blue Jackets coming up here at Rogers Arena. You're listening to Canuck Central.